Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice. Mona, Rebecca, I see we are talking about speeding up processing of petitions today.
Yes, Mark. Expediting these EB5 petitions has been the talking point for what, the last 18 months?
Well, Mona, that's because we saw inactivity from USCIS in 2019, which was an issue that was raised in the stakeholders meeting that took place back in March of this year. It was hosted by Sarah Kendall, who is the chief of the Immigrant Investor Program Office, or I think many know by now, the IPO. Interestingly enough, USCIS did realize that the case completion rates had decreased, but they believed it was necessary because they wanted to take the time to train adjudicators to improve productivity.
Rebecca, we digress. We're discussing expedites here.
And I'm getting there. I think everybody has to complain about USCIS at some point, don't they?
I know. But we have discussed USCIS's inactivity to death.
And even legal processes in which they maybe do it on time.
Well, we have discussed mandamus quite a lot, Mark, actually.
Exactly.
About two or three episodes. But that's important because there are so many petitions out there right now. It seems to be the in word. If you don't have a result, hey, let's go and sue the government. Mm-hmm. But there are other ways.
Yes, there are. And it could be nicer ways, as we said. We noticed that expedite petitions, there's no changes at this point. But Mona, is there a way to expedite an immigrant petition?
So instead of a mean mandamus, this would be almost like a proactive pretty please.
That's a very good way of describing it, Mark. Absolutely, exactly. And not only that, the HEROES Act has made a difference. Just over a month ago, it was passed by the House of Rep in Congress. The HEROES Act did have a bunch of things which would really expedite immigrant petitions for anybody on the front line of COVID. And even though the HEROES Act didn't go through, it's because it was kind of dead on arrival when it got to the Senate.
Well, Mona, let me ask you, HEROES Act, what is that?
Oh, the HEROES Act? You didn't hear of the HEROES Act, Mark. Health and Economic Recovery Omnibus Emergency Solutions Act.
Easy for you to say. HEROES.
Right. It's just another one of the acts which has been brought in by the economic crisis brought about by COVID-19, unfortunately.
Yeah, but Mona, we've been getting a lot of confusion with the HEROES Act versus expediting an EB-5 petition per se.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's really born of the fact that AILA have been putting so much out to support the HEROES Act. And, you know, as Ben Johnson has been stating, and Ben Johnson's AILA's executive director, that the HEROES Act, it really recognizes everybody, whether you're native born or not, or foreign born, but anyone who has a vital role to play in the nation's recovery. And yes, we're looking at frontline medical doctors, but it could be anybody. It could be somebody who's manufacturing masks or ventilators, or perhaps you're a pharmacist who has an antidote and you're hiding it. Any essential person. But as we said, unfortunately, the HEROES Act has not moved beyond being passed by the House.
So successful through the House, brick wall at the Senate.
That doesn't mean to say you cannot utilize the same premise, Mark, because DHS have released a memorandum. It was entitled, do you remember the title of that, Rebecca?
Yes, that was the Advisory Memorandum on Identification Essential Critical Infrastructure Workers During COVID-19 Response.
Okay, you're reading.
She came prepared for a podcast interview. Listener, that's for you. Rebecca comes prepared, so you get the info.
That's a mouthful as well. But the bottom line is this memorandum does allow certain provisions for certain physicians and frontline workers. And we're not talking about EB-5 alone, Mark. We're talking about physicians with an approved I-140. We're talking about non-immigrant workers on a J-1 and H-1. In fact, there was an outreach to foreign workers, even though the Trump administration have tried to ban any H-1s and J-1s. They are allowing any essential people coming in. If you're an essential doctor, essential nurse, it is important because right now, you know, we really need these people.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we were having issues, Mark, I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, with the consulates in the embassies that are being, you know, a lot of routine visas are not happening. The interviews are being canceled because of COVID, but they are allowing those who have immigrant visas or non-immigrant visas that have been approved by USCIS to get interviews because of emergencies or mission critical visas that are needed because of in the time that we are in.
Yeah, that's interesting, Rebecca, because the consulates are closed. So people are saying, well, how do we get through? Do we call them? Do we email them? Because are they actually working?
Yeah, so good question. Although they're not taking these routine visa appointments, just because face-to-face appointments, you're afraid of spreading. What they're doing is that you are allowing to email the consulate and you can ask what the procedure is in getting an emergency interview. And a lot of these are being done online. So social distancing, you doing a lot, again, Zoom calls, all of this is coming through right now.
Yeah. And they are being approved. That's the important thing.
Yes, they are being approved, but you do have to be careful, though, for some countries that are not allowing, you know, certain travel restrictions. So it is best to just please do contact us or anyone in the area who knows what's happening in the local government, just because you don't want to have an interview and then you can't get out. So yeah, that's the problem we're seeing.
So with regards to people who are in the country, I'm sure that their ears are pricking up if they didn't already know this. They can file for an expedite, or are we talking about a mandamus, Rebecca? What are we talking about here? We're talking about expedites.
Yes, we're talking about expedites, which we would file as the I-526 petition, for instance, is pending, not suing the government, which is what we do with the mandamus.
Right. You're pretty pleased as opposed to get this done. Yeah. When we're filing an expedite, it's not filing the entire I-526 petition again, though, is it?
No, it's not. You can file the expedite. You can request an expedite with the I-526 petition, or you can request thereafter, especially with what's happening now with COVID. A lot of doctors out there who have I-526 petitions filed can go ahead and request an expedite.
This is where, Mark, we wanted to really differentiate, because expedites and projects and EB-5 has been quite muddled up over the last 2-3 years. There have been projects which have had a blanket expedite and people have confused that. So we thought perhaps it's a good idea right now to explain, first of all, for an individual versus project. So let's talk about the individual first, Rebecca, that's where we are at. Doctors who are on the front line in COVID, they have an EB-5 petition pending. How do they proceed?
So they themselves can proceed by filing an expedite petition. They can either do it by phone. You can call USCIS to request an expedite petition.
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know you could do it by phone.
Yes, you can. And USCIS, the adjudicating officer, can also send for additional requested documents to explain why do you want an expedited request on this case. But I think the best for us that we have seen is that you actually file a petition, yeah, or an expedite petition with supporting documents to show why are you as an individual should be granted expedite relief on your case.
It is faster in many ways, because even on the phone, after you've been on hold for like an hour to 2 hours, then the officer is only going to request the same documents.
Yes, by far. So you might as well skip that step and give the information from the beginning.
So how would you show that you are on the front line? A statement would be good enough, something from the hospital?
Well, how much information? As much as possible. We want to show not that you're, like you said, on the front line. How are you here to help stop COVID or to help mitigate COVID, I should say? Are you on the front line, you know, helping patients? Are you trying to show that you're coming up with a medication? So what we would need is supporting documents from, like you said, the hospitals, a statement from you to say what is it that you're involved in. If you're a physician, maybe you own your own hospital to show that how many patients are you seeing a day. So there's many different things. I think each case has to be looked at individually.
Right.
That case by case, depending on where you are and how much documents we have, we can get that expedited.
Right. And the COVID cases really come under the national interest situation. These kind of national interest situations really only come up in public emergencies, or perhaps urgent humanitarian reasons, maybe a bit of both?
Correct. It comes under both the urgent humanitarian reasons and for national interest.
Well, I think it also depends on what your position is. So, for example, if we have a nurse who's a single mother, and if anything happens to her, what happens to her children, that could come under the humanitarian reasons. Or we could have an ambulance worker. It could be in national interest. But I think most of the doctors that we've seen adjudicated, those have been utilized under national. We've seen the response being in both humanitarian and national interest. So I think that USCIS themselves mix and match.
Yeah. And I think it's important too, and I know we're going to go into a bit more on the discretion of USCIS, but I know we keep mentioning doctors and we're mentioning nurses and physicians, but it's for those who are on the front lines with whatever you do when it comes with helping the COVID pandemic. So as scientists, anyone who's out there, manufacturers, like you said, who are providing essential workers that are out there, I think anyone who has a pending petition and you think that you are essential towards the COVID pandemic, I think it has a good way of filing for an expedite petition.
Right. And Rebecca, under going back to that long-winded memorandum, which was released by DHS, is there a time period in which you have to file? Because I believe that was enacted at the end of April.
Yes. But because the pandemic, they're starting it back in January, and then they're allowing you to go ahead and file under this.
Wait, Rebecca, it's not. It was April 17th, 2020.
Yes, that was it. Date of the enactment, but it's going back to January of 2020, and you can go ahead and file an application under this memorandum that was enacted. And you also have up through 180 days at the end of the emergency.
So 180 days until after the end, and we're nowhere near the end.
Exactly. So I think this is something that's really good that should be brought out more, I think, and needs to get more attention. So that way we have all the essential workers out here doing the best they can do.
I think so. And certainly if anybody has a petition pending and their visa's running out and they're wondering whether they should just return home or not, it certainly keeps them here in the United States where they're really needed.
Yeah. And again, both non-immigrant and immigrant visas are for this.
Yeah, but what if you are an essential worker at the front of the line and you are perhaps a Chinese born, so you don't have a visa date?
Good question. So that's where I think when the expedite comes into play, the timing matters, because if your priority date is not current, you're expediting your case I don't want to say for no reason, but if you don't have the priority date current, you're not going to be able to get the green card. But I think this is what DHS is trying to release, this whole memorandum coming out for these workers. I think this is where it's important and critical, because in there, it also mentions special immigrant visas. So maybe you have a green card that's pending, but it's going to be years before you can get one. This is where you could come in under a special immigrant and you can get a green card through this. This has to be brought out and this has to be brought to the forefront.
Interesting.
And what more, Mona, what's important with this advisory is that it allows H-1B workers and any of those who need permission first to move from location, it allows them to go ahead and do that. So if you need, or more doctors are needed in more state in another state more than the one they're in, it allows them to go ahead to do that without having to get approved first, which can take months.
Right, because you do have an issue with moving under an H-1.
Well, Mona, we've been talking about individual expedites, but how can we come under a project or what we would consider a blanket expedite?
That's important for people to understand. First of all, that there is such a thing as a blanket expedite. Although, in my knowledge, and we've been doing EB-5 for, 12 plus years, I only know of about 3 to 4 projects in which a blanket expedite was approved. And I know we tried to do it a couple of times and we did not get it through, basically because there was no national interest, or USCIS did not accept a national interest. I feel here they are quite narrow.
Yes, yes. And I feel that they've narrowed it even further. But in these, it's important to have an expedite request coming from an official U.S. government entity. And that's where you need to have the support in order to get this as a national interest.
Right. For example, if you had support from the Department of State or some high official, I feel that is what's required right now for you to get a blanket petition.
Mona, what kind of project right now would we be able to get through as an expedite project?
Well, really, Rebecca, there's no definition of what will and will not go through. It is a case-by-case basis. But I would say a real-life example of expedites could be something like, say, a manufacturer of a hurricane and tornado resistant home, when we know that this is just before hurricane season is coming. Right now, at this point, perhaps it could be a biotech project. Perhaps it could be a project relating to producing more ventilators or something relating to pharmacy.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I've seen one project out there having drones so that way medication can get dispersed.
Oh, yes.
To those who, yeah, leave their homes. And if we get a, hopefully we get a vaccine soon, I think this would be a great project to have.
I forgot about that drone project. That's a smart project, Mark. It's still up in the air, but it's literally, but it's delivering the vaccine via a drone.
Very cool. Very cool.
So that would be an example, I think, right now that we can show as something, you know, that would be able to get expedited quickly.
Right. But just for our listener, there are published criterias that USCIS have. And these published criterias could technically work for both a blanket project expedite or an individual expedite. Most of the time, people or law firms get individual expedites approved. It isn't common to get projects, but it has been done.
Yes. Yes. So I've noticed that USCIS has narrowed their policies. They implemented something new back in May 10th in 2019.
Yes. Yes. Prior to May of last year, the two areas where they did look at which you could use for an expedite was what? Emergency situations and non-for-profit organizations requesting.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and request a compelling interest of USCIS. They completely took that one out.
I don't know what a compelling interest of USCIS is supposed to mean anyway.
that would be with the national interest, right?
Yeah. So really, you have only three or four situations: severe financial loss, urgent humanitarian reasons, Department of Defense or national interest situations, and what am I missing?
USCIS's error. That one is not there all the time. That's if something, you know, let's say USCIS denies a case in error, or, you know, something happens, they return something in error, you can then request an expedite for that.
Right. And just to repeat myself one last time, I would say it's very hard to describe an emergency situation that requires expediting an I-526 petition associated with any EB-5 project outside of a disaster relief effort. It's hard to imagine an urgent humanitarian need in that respect, but there have been some. National interest really is the most compelling reason.
Yeah. So what we get after that is, I think there's also confusion in what does it mean to have an expedite approved? There's a difference between having an expedite approved and actually having your application approved.
Oh, yes. So just because you have an expedited petition, that does not mean to say that you are going to have an approved petition. But Rebecca, this was thrown at me by one of our investors who had this question. He said that he'd heard not just from us, but he'd heard from many different places that when you file for a mandamus, most often you get an RFE. Quite frankly, that's been our experience. If you file for an expedite, most of the time you avoid the RFE. And you know, how much truth is there in that?
I err on saying anything on that. So as we were saying, look, getting the expedite approved is great because USCIS agrees that you have a compelling reason as to why they should bring your case from the back of the line to the front of the line. And they try to do that within 45 days, 60 days. That means then it goes to an adjudicator who's actually going to review your case. So USCIS has made it clear, though, that they are keeping the integrity of the immigration system. So by no way are you going to get approved just because you have an expedite reason. You still have to go through your security checks. You still have to go through, does your petition meet the requirements of what was required by the USCIS? So you still have to go through a thorough and completed adjudication by the officer before you do get that approval.
And I think it's very important to point out that we have a number of petitions which we have experienced this particular point, that just because you filed within an expedited project does not necessarily mean that your case would be adjudicated in record time. We've had petitions filed in such projects which have taken more than a year and a half to be adjudicated.
Yes. We've seen that with quite a few, actually, petitions.
Yeah.
But we've also seen petitions approved within 90 days. And I've seen individuals who've had compelling reasons as to why they should get expedited and got approved so quickly for the expedite. And then it did. It took 2 years. One petition took 2 years to get approved.
Right.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. One question which developers ask us all the time, can we show severe financial loss and by getting a bridge loan and saying that the fees for the bridge loan is very high? And if we don't get an expedite, this is severe financial loss. And we say, well, I don't think USCIS will consider that just because you're paying additional fees on a bridge loan. But a point about the severe financial loss is that really, while documentation is required to support any expedite request, as you stated, Rebecca, USCIS does state that where a company or individual claims, quote, severe financial loss, unquote, it's the actual loss that we have to document, not potential loss. When we say potential loss, they kind of think that it's up in the air. And I think with the case of COVID, now that we are seeing a drain in the economy, I think USCIS might look at the whole point of severe financial loss a little bit more liberally. Let's hope anyway.
Yeah, I can see that happening. But again, I think the national interest is more compelling. Financial loss, it's very hard, to get.
Right. Although we don't, this is not a point for 526 petitions, where I would like to point out that you cannot get an expedite petition if you have premium processing available. We do not have premium processing available for 526 yet, but if you are filing under an I-140 and you want an expedite, you can't if there's premium processing.
Well, Mona, Rebecca, it seems like there are a lot of new factors because of COVID. And it seems that as we learn more about COVID and how we in the United States are handling this epidemic, it seems like there may be more factors coming out in the near future. It's one of those we'll see.
Well, yes. We've really talked about the medical side today with the expedite mark, but I think that with EB5, we're going to focus more on the economic side because, quite frankly, it's really the economic side that EB5 mm-hmm. can do so much for the United States.
Much like it did back in the financial meltdown of 2008.
Yes. We'll leave that for a different talk. We'll leave that for a different podcast.
Understood. Well, on that note, Mona, Rebecca, thank you so much for making time to update us on EB5 Investment Voice.
You're welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.